Judiciary Committee will come to order. Chair recognizes a quorum. Members, today we'll be hearing three bills on our agenda, 769, 300, and 495. On 769, the referral will be to Ways and Means via memo. On 300, it'll be placed in the general register. That's the intent anyway. And on 495, re-referral to housing finance. Oh, it's going to general register. Okay. Or placed in general register. Okay. So first order of business, approval of minutes from March 15th. Do I have a motion? Oh, Rep. Chair Scott moves the March 15 minutes. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. Minutes of March 15th are approved. First, Representative Carlson is not going to be here. Oh, he is here. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We have two Carlsons. So, okay. The other Carlson emailed said he was going to be late. But Representative Lynn Carlson is here. Welcome to committee. Come on up and take the seat, Representative Carlson. The chair moves that House File 769 be recommended to be re-referred to your committee, the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was asked a question yesterday. Somebody said, are there two Carlsons in the legislature? And I said, well, there's two in the House, and I said, there's one in the Senate. So there's three of us around, so I can see where there'd be the confusion. This is a bill dealing with the HERB Board, and this was a bill that was passed in 2014, and it sets up a process for unfair labor practices. And instead of having to go to court, there was a board of three members created that would address the issues, and it was a it was geared up to be a much faster and simpler way than and more cost-effective way as opposed to going to the courts. The reason that we're before this committee is that there are some data privacy issues in the bill, and I have a witness here today that will be prepared to answer any questions that the committee might have relative to data privacy.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Carlson.
Pardon?
Thank you. So you wanted just to do questions if we had them, or do you want to do a presentation?
Well, I think maybe she could make a few comments about the data privacy and the necessary reasons for it.
That's perfect. Go ahead. Please welcome to the committee and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I am the current chair of the Public Employment Relations Board. So the board was created in 2014 to process and decide unfair labor practices under PELRA. At the time the legislation was passed, there was no accompanying legislation to address the data maintained by the board. So this proposed legislation clarifies how that data maintained by the board will be classified under the Data Practices Act. Most government agencies have specific statutes that classify the data in their possession, so like licensing boards, Human Rights Department. This proposed legislation will provide clear guidance to entities and individuals filing or defending unfair labor practice charges filed with the board about how the data that they're submitting to the board will be classified. It also makes it possible for public employers to share private personnel data with the board during the investigation of an unfair labor practice charge. So other than certain identified data that's specifically outlined in the bill, the presumption is that the data maintained by the board is protected non-public data or confidential, and the data becomes public once it's admitted into evidence at a hearing. So the bill kind of outlines that, but that's essentially the purpose of the bill is to classify that data that will be in the board's hands as it is processing and then hearing unfair labor practice charges. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Blissenbach. Questions for Ms. Blissenbach? Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so to Ms. Blissenbach, so all the data that is once it's entered in to evidence at a hearing, all types of data will then become public?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Chair, Member Scott, unless it is covered by a protective order, which the hearing officer would have the opportunity to, issue a protective order.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so someone's personnel data wouldn't necessarily become public then, because this person could basically, what did you call them again? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, who is the person that can make that determination of whether it becomes public or not?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Chair Member Scott, similar to a court, the hearing officer would be the one who could issue a protective order, or if it's in front of the board on an appeal, the board would be the decider.
Okay.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to House Research, is this done in other places in statute, or is this kind of a unique situation?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so this is not dissimilar to what happens at, say, a judicial hearing under the judiciary. A judge can make certain, in general, evidence that's used in court generally becomes public, but a judge can protect things by having them filed under seal or issuing a protective order so that certain information doesn't become public.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Blissenbach? Chair Johnson.
I don't have the rest of the statute in front of me at this time, but you mentioned hearing officer. I'm just wondering if there's any special qualifications to understand Chapter 13 and any other judicial issues, because if they're handling this like evidence in a court, they need to have some type of understanding of those statutes and procedures as well.
So your question was for the testifier, Chair Johnson?
That is correct.
Okay. Ms. Blissenbach?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. The hearing officers that are contracted with the board are all attorneys. Most of them have been arbitrators for a long period of time, so they're familiar with running hearings, and they have that experience.
Chair Johnson? Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Blissenbach or for the bill's author? you have an amendment, Chair Scott?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm not going to offer that amendment today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then the chair's motion is that House File 769 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
Motion passes. The bill is referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, Ms. Blissenbach. Thank you,
Chair Krause. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill on the calendar is Representative Pinto here?
He was just in rules with us, so he's probably on his way.
Okay. Representative Nora is here, though, because I just looked over right at him. I looked right in your face, so you're here. So you've got House File 495. And Representative Noor moves that his bill, House File 495, be recommended to be placed on the general register. You want to go ahead and get started with your bill, Representative Noor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 495 is a tenant-landlord issue whereby we're trying to get the lease that most of the people who signed their lease to identify the unit that they'll be moving in. It's also puts the issue of power imbalance, whereby the landlord can specify how many months that they have to provide notice to the landlord. So we're trying to make sure that the same notice can be given by the tenants. And this usually impacts students and also low-income individuals, especially surrounding the University of Minnesota and other areas. Mr. Chair, this is about consumer protection, whereby we're trying to provide an equal footing for the individuals who are impacted. And with that, I do have a testifier who will walk us through the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chairman Lesh and members of the committee, thank you for hearing me. I will start. My name is Paul Bernberg. I am a retired attorney. I practiced landlord-tenant law for approximately 25 years before retiring at the end of last year, the first day of this year. Among other things I did, I was one of the five reporters who drafted what's now Chapter 504B, the recodification bill in 1999 that moved all the housing bills, housing statutes into 504B and modernized the language. I led the drafting of the Minnesota State Bar Association form lease. I will say my remarks are going to be a little bit off the cuff because I did not expect to be the main testifier on this bill this morning. I thought Mr. Dane was going to come. I'll do the best I can.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I guess that's a thank you. There are four parts of the bill. The fourth part of the bill is to fix a drafting error that some typist got carried away with his or her teeth.
Mr. Bernberg, maybe I can hold you out for a second. So this, if we can just get clarification, so are there limits to what we're considering in this committee on the bill? I could just the whole thing? Mm-hmm. The whole thing. Okay, forget I said anything. Go ahead,
okay.
Mr. Bernberg.
As I said, Section 4 just fixed a drafting error from somebody typed an extra T into the word later to make it latter. The first two sections of the bill deal with the problem of leases that, number one, do not state the unit that the tenant will get. So the tenant basically signs up with a contract that says, we'll get you an apartment in this building or a building nearby somewhere in the building. And so when the tenant shows up, I mean, he might have thought he was going to get a nice view of the park, and he ends up with a view of the alley. Or he needs a first floor because of a walking impediment, he gets the third floor. It happens that these leases tend to be more predominant near the U of M, but there are leases, and I've run into them in my practice throughout the state. The second problem is leases that on their face they look like 12-month leases, but in fact the last month is a shorted month. Buried somewhere in the lease is a provision that the last month, the lease ends on the 10th of the month, the 15th or the 20th, and so the tenant gets the last month, the landlord says, well, you got to be packing. And he says, what? He says, read page 12 of your lease, and now the tenant's really jammed up. Again, this tends to be more prevalent in the university area. These two sections of the bill, Section 1 and 2, do not ban these practices. Well, they ban the first practice. They say that if you're going to lease to somebody, you got to name the unit he's going to get. So he can walk around it, see what it's like, decide if it's a good view, a good number of stairs, et cetera. It allows the second practice. It just requires disclosure on the first page. And I will say that the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association is fine with this bill. And part of the reason they're fine with the bill is among all the most of the professional landlords, including all the ones that use the multi-housing lease, the first page does say exactly which days the person's renting. It's not buried somewhere else in the lease. The last thing I'm going to talk about is Section 3 of the bill. Section 3, remember, I guess I'll introduce it by saying a residential landlord's right to leases. There's really no negotiation. It's not like a commercial lease where there's real negotiation. It's boilerplate. The tenant, it's a take it or leave it situation. And what this section is designed to do is to deal with the following problem. The landlord sets up a lease where he can give 1 month notice, but the tenant needs to give two, or vice versa. And so you end up with a tenant planning on a two-month basis. He can't rent a place 1 month out because then he's going to have two places to be in at once and have to owe two rent. So he plans his life 2 months in advance. The landlord can then maybe give like 2 months notice. He's got a place. He's going to move to wherever he's going to move. Now the landlord gives him 1 month notice. Where is he going to be for a month? Essentially, he's homeless. Or the landlord raises the rent, in which case he's probably homeless because he can't afford the higher rent, or he's got to dig into his pocket indirectly. And so what this provision does is it says the landlord can pick in the lease whatever notice period he wants. 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 month most of the year, but not a winter notice, and the winter's got to be 4 months. Just got to be Evie Stevie. Whatever's good for the landlord is good for the tenant. If not, the tenant can pick the thing. I will say that probably these leases are illegal anyhow. There have been a few trial court decisions on it. The tenants have won them. The decisions have tended to follow what this statute provision does. There was a settlement many years ago, and AG brought a case, and the settlement was exactly along these lines. The last thing I want to talk to the committee about is the effective date. And I think I sent an email out, but I think it might be helpful if I pass out a piece of paper. I'm not sure.
Should I hand it to the clerk? Go ahead and grab it. Pass it out, and then go ahead and begin. Please continue your testimony.
Here's the main point I plan to come to talk to you about today, so hopefully I'm better prepared on this. The House file currently says this section, for sections 1, 2, and 3, this section is effective the day following final enactment. The Senate file, the companion bill 125, says this section is effective the day following final enactment and applies to all leases entered into on or after that date. Section 3 says this section is effective the day following final enactment and applies to all leases in existence or entered into on or after that date. Now, obviously, at some point, these got to get amended so that they all say that both Senate and House say the same thing. In the handout and the email I sent out, again, pretty much the same thing, I quoted three existing statutes that use pretty established language. This section is effective January 1, 2011, and for leases entered into or renewed on or after that date. 160, that's 504E171. 161 says that same, basically the same thing. Then it says, for the purposes of this section, the states it will, that is, month-to-month leases and things like that, shall be deemed to be renewed at the commencement of each rental period. 178, pretty similarly. Based on that, I suggest that the committee, at some point, the committee today perhaps amend the bill to have an effective date for all three sections that says this section is effective the day following final enactment, which is the author's chosen date. For leases entered into or renewed on or after that date, for the purpose of this section, states of will shall be deemed to be renewed at the commencement of each rental period. This language has several advantages. One, it's tried and true. It hasn't ever been challenged that some of this language from the last two statutes I read are 40 years old. It makes clear what happens with renewal leases. It defines the renewal leases, no question about that. And it avoids the retroactivity problem. And there's the contracts clause of the United States Constitution that suggests that retroactively impairing contracts is not allowed. Now, there's developed a lot of fudge in this thing. I think under a recent case called Spen v. Mellon, which at the U.S. Supreme Court in last year, I think that the Senate language would probably survive a court fight, but it strikes me there's no good reason to invite it. There's no good let people plan for the future and not have to worry about what they did in the past, and therefore I would recommend changing the effective date language to what it. And the last thing I want to comment on, I saw one amendment posted that would change the effective date to July of 2021. That would be an extraordinarily long distance effective date. I looked up the statutes in 504B. Most of them, of course, have just gone into effect August 1 on the default, which is a couple months. There are four that have specific dates, and they were set off 1 month, 2 months, nothing, day after enactment, 7 months, and one weird one that had to do with attorney fees, 15 months. 2.5 years is just extraordinarily long, and I think it's just out of line. Again, I thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Bernberg. Questions for Mr. Bernberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that was one of my main issues with this bill was the effective date, and you can't just go retroactively into a lease And so because that is a written contract, and you can't, you're not supposed to change that after it's been agreed to by both parties. So I'm just interested in hearing kind of what the committee's thoughts are, but it seems like the language that you have towards the bottom of the page that you handed out, Mr. Bernberg, that seems to be in my opinion, the best language. And I don't know, are we going to repair this today, Mr. Chair, or is this going to be repaired on the floor, or do you have thoughts on that?
Chair Scott, I don't see any amendments. We haven't posted any amendments for this. I think this is one of those things that if the repairs are required, that we do it at the next stop, which would be the floor. So that's my initial thought right now, unless there's a big need. Chair Scott.
Yeah, I'm really uncomfortable with the language that is in the bill right now.
Well, Representative Noor, you made deadline in the Senate on this, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we've got a couple more weeks. I don't want to have a whole other hearing on this. But if you want to have us lay it over and get that fix in, we could reschedule it for a vote next week, and you'd be okay with that, right? I mean, timeline-wise.
Mr. Chair, the Senate file is totally different from what we have, and it's part of the contention that we resolved in the housing because it actually goes retro. And this bill that we have, House File 495, does not go back into the other leases. So technically the two files are not compatible.
Well, thank you. I understand that, Representative Norbert. We don't pass the sentence language over here. That's up to you as the author as to what language you want to do. If you want to match up with the Senate, feel free to. You can do a delete all. If you don't want to, you can meet them head-on-head in conference and knuckle it out there, which I see no problem with doing that either. So it's really up to you. What do you want to do? Do you want to do what the Senate wants, or do you want to meet him in conference and try to negotiate a compromise?
I think the best way to go is through the conference it goes to.
Okay. So, Chair Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Representative Noor, would you be willing on the House floor to accept an amendment with the language that Mr. Bernberg has outlined here on the bottom of the page? Would that be something that you'd be amenable to on the floor?
Representative Noor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, I will, based on the conversation we have, if it's only specific to the effective date.
Right. That's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, let's just amend it. Let's just pass it through and amend it on the floor then. Does that sound good, everybody?
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Any other questions for Representative Noor or the testifier? Is there anyone else? Representative O'Neill.
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair, as I'm sitting here listening to this, I recall a bill very, very similar to this coming through before, and I'm just wondering if the bill author knows sort of the history, more the broader history of this bill and how we're coming to agreement now. And it seems like it's vastly similar to what we heard before, but it didn't get passed into law, and I'm just wondering if the bill author knows that history at all of this bill.
Representative Noor.
Mr. Chair, very briefly, I don't have the whole history of this bill. I'm sure it came through last session, but I don't know the whole history about the bill.
I have zero recollection of it. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe it wasn't even this committee. It might have been maybe housing way back when. I'm not even sure, but back when Representative Clark was chairing.
Because I have zero recollection of it doesn't mean it didn't come through here. But
fair enough, Mr. Chair. Well, as long as there's not opposition to it, and it seems like they must have come to some sort of agreement. I know it was rather contentious last time it came through, and there was concerns, and so I'm just trying to understand how are we now in a place that there's peace in the valley.
Okay. Well, if we could maybe find that out between now and next step, that'd be helpful as well. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, then Representative Noor's motion is that House File 495 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. You're on your way. Thank you, Representative Neuer. Representative Pinto.
Mr. Lesh, I just want to say I'm going to hand out what amounts to a business card to your staff.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm be happy to hear from Representative Scott or anybody.
Representative Pinto, we have a motion that House File 300 be placed on the General Register. Anyone want to offer that motion? I'll offer the motion then. House File 300 is before us. Representative Pinto, we have a DE1 amendment. Does everyone have a copy of the DE1 amendments? In order to get the bill in the shape the author so desires, all in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. The DE1 amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Pinto.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 300 is a bill that has come forward through the State Bar Association. It is a bill that clarifies which court should have original jurisdiction when a party seeks to challenge the award of a public procurement contract. There is currently some confusion regarding this, whether these cases should be heard in the district court or the court of appeals, whether separate actions need to be filed in both courts. And there have been a longstanding policy that district courts would handle these cases first, and then a recent court of appeals opinion that made some changes to that and simply reinstates that policy. I do have a testifier with me who can provide more and probably far better background, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Volbrecht. I'm here on behalf of the MSBA. I'm also a shareholder at the Fabianski Law Firm. I've been practicing in this area for about 30 years, which means I'm getting old. Anyway, we have been working on this legislation for a couple of years with pretty much all the interested stakeholders, including state and local government representatives. As representative said, it is a purely procedural proposal. It doesn't change the substantive law. It doesn't change the standard of review. It doesn't make any changes to what remedies are available or not available under current law. Its sole purpose is to make sure that all procurement challenges, bid protests, are going to be filed and really return to the status quo. For a long time, a substantial period of time, at least before I started practicing law, which is close enough to forever at this point, all bid protests were filed at the district court, and that makes sense. That's the court that's really equipped to handle them. These are fast-moving actions. They can get handled in a matter of days or weeks. A month is usually on the outside. Those courts can schedule hearings quickly, take testimony, take care of the issue, and that's the way the cases were always handled. There's a fairly recent Minnesota Supreme Court decision which sort of changed that. And I'm not saying the Supreme Court got it wrong, but they grafted another procedural rule that had never been applied to this before, which basically then said, depending on what the public body did, whether it was considered administrative or executory or quasi-judicial, you might have to go to the Court of Appeals first. And the Court of Appeals is a great court, but it's not built for this kind of speed. Or you might have to go to the district court, or you might have to go to both. Completely unclear. The only people who win when it's really unclear like that are guys like me. It doesn't do any good for the public body. It doesn't do any good for the challenger. So the sole purpose of this is to say every one of these actions will start at the district court. And like we said, there will be no substantive law changes. I honestly think this one is pretty close to a no-brainer. All the stakeholders who have looked at it agree that that's a place they should start, and that's really all we're asking for. If there are any questions, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take them.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Volbrecht? Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Volbrecht, thank you for being here. So since the 2015 court decision, have there been a number of cases that have gone to the Court of Appeals, or do you have those figures?
I do not have those figures.
Okay. All right.
Chair Scott.
All right. That's it. Thank you.
So I have a question, Mr. Volbrecht. So does the Court of Appeals sit as a finder of fact in this case, if their original jurisdiction, or what do they do?
Honestly, that's the question that I don't think anyone has really figured out, and I am not aware of any cases personally that have gone that route. I think, honestly, a lot of people have sort of stepped back, and it's raised more questions as to whether you take a step at all. But, yeah, they would essentially be in a position where they would be the only fact finder. So whatever happened before the public body would be on the record, and then the question would be, will there be any other evidence taken? And one of the problems you run into there is that at that initial level, a protester, for example, or frankly the public body, may not have all the information that they need to figure things out. So then you get into this whole question of how do you go forward, how do you figure it out? Meanwhile, you've got the clock ticking because a lot of these contracts are something that need to get going pretty quickly, and if there's that uncertainty, that just causes issues for everyone.
Okay. All right. Well, Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, when somebody says they're really, everybody's kind of agrees, it kind of makes me wonder a little bit. I mean, is there, is this something that, I don't know if the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities or, any of the other organizations representing, you're from the Bar Association, I understood, but I just wonder, is there nobody that has any concerns about this? Are the cities don't, the counties don't, none of the public bodies, they're all in line for this?
Mr. Goldberg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, yes, that's my understanding, and I've been involved in some of the discussions with various public owner groups, and I'm going to plead, I suppose, like somebody at the Oscars where you forget to say thank you to someone. I'll screw up the names of the entities I've talked to, but really, yeah, it's given that this is purely procedural. Everyone still has questions on substantive issues, but I think everyone is in agreement that procedurally this makes sense. If people want to talk about substantive issues, that's for another day, but let's all agree to go to one place to at least get the decision made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling, I should note, too, the bill's been before a number of committees in both bodies, and I'm not aware of any testimony against, and so one would think the Coalition of Minnesota Cities or whoever, League of Minnesota Cities, or somebody would have, if they had concerns, it would have, risen to their attention at some point. I'm not aware of any testimony against, so there may not be a catch in this particular case.
Okay. Seeing no other questions. Oh, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to thank Representative Pinto for bringing this, and why I don't really know anything about public procurement actions. I do practice regularly in the appellate courts, and I would agree with you that they are not equipped to taking evidence, and in the cases I handle, criminal cases, it takes quite some time to even get on the calendar because of how they do their scheduling, and that just isn't the appropriate court to be making these decisions, so I support your bill. Thank you.
Anyone from the audience who wants to take up Chair Liebling's bait and testify against
it? Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go.
All right. Boom.
If you were cited, I guess.
Yes.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Irene Gao with the League of Minnesota Cities, and actually we do support the bill. We did work with the State Bar Association. My understanding is also that the Associated General Contractors also support the bill. I'm not sure if they're in the room to confirm that, but in working through this process during the interim, those were the stakeholders who were involved.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Touch and go, Mr. Chair.
Huh?
I said that was touch and go, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
but I guess
it's an absolute love fest in here. Okay, so I don't see any other public testimony on it. I don't see any other committee discussion on this. My motion is that House File 300, wait, is this 300? Yeah, 300, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Members,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Members, as you can see, we are back to pre-deadline footing here because that took us 35 minutes to get through all three bills on the calendar. So we're going to be managing our time as such henceforth. We have coming up, I guess this means the bills we have coming up tomorrow.
We have House File 637, Representative Morrison, health-related professions, temporary license suspensions, and background checks modified. House File 1744, Mason, Family Law Mediation Task Force established. House File 2319, this Representative Pinto again, Human Services Program Integrity Modified, criminal penalties created and money appropriated. And House File 167, Representative Lee, supplemental environmental projects in conjunction with certain enforcement actions against polluters. Members, if we get through these, we may consolidate hearings so that we can do caucuses and discussions during our other committee time as well. I'd also encourage the Republican caucus, we will be discussing the process about how the finance process works. It's good for folks that have not been through this before, who have only kind of been through it tangentially, to understand as we're formulating the omnibus finance bill 3.5 weeks from now, like what are the steps that lead up to that? What are the different kind of hoops that need to be jumped through before we actually end up with what our finance bill is on final markup? And it's good for everyone to understand that ahead of time. So some of that time hopefully we can be used. You guys can discuss your side, what we're going to do, and then you can talk about what kind of sand you're going to throw in the gear or whatever, okay? What color sand? Probably red sand, okay? Any other questions for the committee? Chair Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, you know, we're hearing a lot of policy bills this week, and we're past that deadline, and just wondering what your intentions were with those.
Well, yeah, these were just bills that made deadline in the Senate. So I don't – if we get to a point, Chair Scott, where we're doing – informational hearings or something, or a hearing on behalf of some other chair who wants to be able to simply stand up on the floor and say to you guys, yeah, we heard it in committee, even though it didn't go to that committee for deadline. I mean, that, you know, we'll be transparent about that, but I don't think we've seen any of those so far. Well, it's Ways and Means. So, yeah, 769. I mean, except for those that have committees that don't have deadlines like Ways and Means and Taxes. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Girl's still alive. Okay. Anything else? Thank you. Committee is adjourned.